And now, Sports Day with Jared Healy and Sam McClure for Kia. The all-electric Kia EV6, Wheels Car of the Year, and Red Energy. Moving house? Call your local energy retailer. Red Energy.
You can't pick players off a computer screen. That's what I'm saying. There needs to be a process with their recruiting and their list management, but there hasn't been because, correct me if I'm wrong, I'd like to know one positive list management move they've made in the last 4 or 5 years.
The stories coming out of the club about the relationship between the coach and the players are disturbing. I'm hearing more and more about players just being a bit disenchanted. It's just a bit of a worry to me. I'm not saying David Noble's gone. He's only a season and a half.
But in trouble.
But I think he's got a lot of work to do to win back some players.
7 minutes past six. Hello, welcome along to Sports Day. Well, the disenchantment Caro spoke of at North Melbourne seemed to play out further this afternoon, with National Recruiting Manager Mark Finnegan and Head of Player Personnel Glenn Luff walking out of the club mid-season. It's a worrying turn of events for the Kangaroos, who currently sits 17th on the ladder with just one win against the COVID-hit Eagles. They were much better last week against Melbourne, it's got to be said. But mid-season walkouts point to a much, much bigger issue than wins and losses. Scoop, a disastrous day for the Kangaroos. In a word, absolutely messy. But there's more than two people walking out. You've got more information. Welcome to you.
Hello, Jared. Yeah, I don't think disastrous is too dramatic a word right now because I'm just reading the AFL record and under the North Melbourne page, the headline is excitement building as a new era dawns. Now, if you look at their recruiting department, which is five men deep, three of those men on the same day
another one
have walked out. Mark Finnegan, the national recruiting manager who's gone to Hawthorn. Glenn Luff, who for the last 3 years has been their list manager. We know his title has changed in the last couple of months. And Ben Berthasol, who was the one that wasn't in the club's statement, who was their recruiting officer. All on the same day, all a week and a half away from the mid-season draft, have left the footy club. It's a day where we're asking more questions than we were of North Melbourne.
Well, fortunately, Brady Rawlings, the North Melbourne GM of football performance, is not far away from joining us. But before we do that, let's welcome the man from the North. Welcome to you, Lee. You're always difficult when you're on the bottom of the ladder, and it's rare that you see mid-season walkouts, though.
It is the old saying, when it rains, it pours. Not much is going right for the Kangaroos at the moment, is it? And this is just, it's a very just unusual timing, isn't it, really? I mean, people come and go at the end of seasons. We know that for one reason or another. But for those three people to pack the bags and leave the club halfway through a season means there's a fair bit of discontent behind the scenes there, one would think.
Jared, as you just mentioned, there are a couple of different GMs of footy at North Melbourne. The GM of footy performance is Daniel McPherson.
Yes.
The GM of footy talent, who the recruiting department answers to, is Brady Rawlings, and he joins us live on Sports Day. Brady, we really appreciate your time. The obvious question is, why would all three decide to leave today?
Well, it's been happening for a couple of weeks and discussions since. It's not quite right that all have made a decision today. So I'd like to put that out there straight up. That's untrue. And all three are in different situations. We've had Ben Berthasol, a recruiting officer, he's been studying over his time at the footy club. He's wanted to get in HR. He got an opportunity presented to him 2 or 3 weeks ago from a recruitment firm, and he's decided to take up that opportunity, which is a great opportunity for Ben. It's for what he's been studying towards for a number of years now while he's been working with us. So it's not entirely true what you spoke about at the start of that segment.
So which bit isn't true, that the three of them haven't left at the same time?
They're all three of different scenarios. So we've got Mark Finnegan's been approached by another club, which he's been weighing up that decision for 3 or 4 weeks now. And I've been in constant contact with him working through that.
Seems very coincidental, Brady, that it all happened in the one day. What was the reason Glenn Luff left?
So Glenn did inform us today of his resignation. So he's a great operator, Glenn. Loved his time working here with me and for us. And he's decided to pursue other opportunities. So that's probably more of a question for Glenn than for me, Jared.
So is it a happy recruiting department at the present time? Because it seems extraordinary, Brady, that three people leave on the cusp of a mid-season draft, and apparently they've all tendered their resignation as operative as today.
Yeah, so on the cusp of the mid-season draft, we're really well prepared for that. There's nothing that's going to change between now and next Wednesday that's going to affect anything we do for mid-season. Obviously, we'll be picking in the first couple of picks, given our ladder position and our one-list spot that's free. So we've gone through the interviewing stage, the football assessment. We're really well placed there. So that won't be affecting anything that we do for next week.
So, Brady, can I just ask you, so North Melbourne fans would be sitting here listening tonight thinking we're 1-9 after we've probably watched our team go backwards rather than forwards in the second year of a rebuild. And the criticism, or the strong criticism, certainly in the media, I mean, you would have heard the comments of Kane Corns last night, has been around the recruitment. And, you know, more than half of your recruiting department have left. I take it on face value that they're all three separate situations, but midway through a season is not an ideal set of circumstances for a team that is trying to go forward and not back.
Yeah, I don't think there's ever an ideal timing for when you lose staff. It's always a challenge. We've had two staff members that have been approached, one through another AFL club and one through a completely different industry, which he'd been studying for. So Ben 100% went with my blessing. I've been working with him around that. He's in his early 30s. He hasn't had a weekend off during a footy season for 12 years. So I totally get that he'd like to look at a different opportunity in a different industry. He's unfortunately went through the COVID period where people have been stood down and stood back up and back to part-time, given the nature of the soft cap cuts. And he's probably looked at a more stable environment being in a recruitment firm rather than a football club.
Can I take you back to Kane Corns' comments last night on Footy Classified? Just take a listen.
You can't pick players off a computer screen. That's what I'm saying. There needs to be a process with their recruiting and their list management that there hasn't been, because correct me if I'm wrong, I'd like to know one positive list management move they've made in the last 4 or 5 years.
So pretty savage stuff from Kane, saying you're only picking guys off a computer screen and no process behind it. Can you convince the North Melbourne fans that that's not as simplistic as it sounded?
I think we all know that, Jared, except for probably one person. So, there's that much that goes into picking football players. The amount of games our scouts go to, the coverage across the nation, whether it be underage, state leagues, in all different states, school football, and that's just the football assessment. Obviously, there's a lot more to football than the way he plays football. Yep. There's the character side of things, which we interview, we do background checks in schools, in jobs, just like every other club does. And clearly, Kane hasn't seen how a football environment works in that area.
Brady, can I just ask you a question? On the sort of chart in the media guide, there's a few people there with GMs of this, GMs of that. Who is the head of football? Are you the head of football at North?
So, Lee, the role's changed a little bit at certain clubs, and you see some of the most successful clubs have split the role. It's a big job. And so we've made the change to split it into two roles. One's the GM of football performance, which is Dan McPherson. So he deals with the coaches and high performance team and analytics. And I'm the GM of football talent, which is recruiting team and contracts and list management strategy. So, the job's a pretty big one. And we felt like we could operate best by dividing up the responsibilities.
So the big question, I guess, if the football department is presenting something to the board, do you both do that or do you do it? How does that work?
Yeah, we both have board involvement. Obviously, got our different areas that we speak to. That works pretty seamlessly.
And just further to Kane's question, he asked to point to a positive in list development or list acquisition over the last 2 or 3 years. I mean, you must sit there, you're struggling to win, and it's always difficult for young players to play well in a losing side. Tell me where you would start to give North Melbourne fans the positives that you see.
Well, I think over the last year and a half, there's been some excitement out on the field with some of our young players that are coming through. It takes time. Clearly, we've seen some other teams go through rebuild phases, and it takes years and it takes experience, and it takes time to get games into these players to develop them. And we're no different. I think there's some signs out there that some players have got some talent and they're going to get even better in the future. But at the moment, it's obviously not leading to wins on the footy field. But, we're seeing some real improvements with some of our youngsters.
So as we all know in footy and right around the world, success has many fathers and failures an orphan. When you sit down to pick out who's going to be your number one draft pick, and you've had some good picks in the recent times, is that a one-man pick? Is it a three-man pick? Who owns that decision? Is the coach involved? How does it translate to picking the number and putting the name next to it?
Yeah, it's quite a process, mate. We obviously fire these players from under 16 level, so we've got some really good knowledge of them by the time they get to the draft in their 18th year. So there's plenty of background there and plenty of football exposure that we've got to make decisions. We collaborate all the time. We have internal debate. We bring in high performance to assess GPS and doctors to assess medical history and injuries, and obviously the coach and risk management committee as well. So it's quite a long process, and there's always a lot of debate to form your draft order as well.
Brady, we really appreciate you coming on. Can I just clear up a couple of things about your number one pick, Jason Horne-Francis? There's a suggestion that he travelled to Adelaide a week ago without the knowledge of the club to see family and management. Is that true?
I've got no idea about that, mate. I don't know where you've got that one from.
Sam Edmund reporting that Jason Horne-Francis missed the round 9 game with Port Adelaide with hamstring tightness after travelling to Adelaide without the club's knowledge.
He certainly missed the game with hamstring tightness. Yes, that's true.
Okay. And is there a reason that you think that he hasn't re-signed with the club yet? Because there was a suggestion that he was going to re-sign before the start of the season.
Well, none of our players have signed from that draft. So it's not uncommon for players to play a season or play even in their second season. We've seen it plenty of times at other clubs that they're in their second season now and still unsigned for the future. So,
yeah, but did you offer him a contract extension?
Jason is contracted to the end of next year. And, at the right time, we hope to extend that. But, we're probably not at that point just yet.
Has the club offered Jason a contract extension?
I don't speak about contract discussions publicly, mate. So, I don't feel like I need to answer that question.
Okay. Brady, we really appreciate you coming on what was a significant day for the footy club. Thank you.
Thank you.
Brady Rawlings there, the GM of football talent at North Melbourne. Plenty to unpack out of that. 133-693 if you're a North Melbourne fan that wants answers or questions. Lee, your gut feel having listened to that?
Well, I was more interested. I must say, the one piece of advice, if ever anyone that I've been involved with asks me they're running for a coaching job, I say, listen, you've got to make sure that you got trust and faith in the CEO and whoever is the head of football. And the fact that there's kind of two heads of football at North seems like you'd think there was at least a head of football, isn't there? Not a joint head of football. So that surprises me. Long way from round 19 last year when they beat Carlton by 39 points. Haven't those two clubs gone in different directions?
More Sports Day with Lee Matthews. He's here for McDonald's right after this.
King! There's those hands again. He's making a difference tonight. That's his third. And now back-to-back goals for Max King. And the Saints are back in front. And they're good. They're scary good, the Saints.
Well, they're fifth on the ladder, Scoop, but tantalisingly, they are equal fourth.
And who's that? The Saints?
The Saints.
Isn't this the Saints? We have to laugh about our industry sometimes, Jerry.
Seven wins, Lee. Three losses.
Wasn't long ago, at the end of last season, the sentiment, Lee, seemed to be, oh, well, the Saints had a really good crack, and it looks like they're just not going to get there, and we're going to have to start again, and the recruits haven't worked. Things change quickly in footy, Lee.
We've got to remind ourselves that footy's different every Monday. Indeed, it is. It was the previous Monday, and next Monday it'll be different than it was last Monday because we're going to have another 9 set of winners and losers. So, yeah, but they actually have got it together. But I think that what has made St Kilda good, I know we're going to speak to Brett Ratton shortly. I mean, whenever they've had Ryder and Marshall at the same time, that's been a real plus for them. And Max King gets getting better by the week, you'd think.
Indeed he is. The bloke who sees him closest than most is Brett Ratton, joins us on the line. Welcome to you, Brett.
Jared, how are you, mate?
I'm going pretty well. How are you feeling this Tuesday after a win? Lee says it changes every Monday. Well, it's probably the same Tuesday after a victory.
Exactly. I think, you know, when you walk into a footy club, you know sort of what's happened on the weekend on that Monday morning. There's some, you know, down faces or there's a big smile. So, you know, the boys did a fantastic job. We didn't play our best footy, but to find a way and, you know, for us to maybe win a bit ugly and not be on our terms, and full credit to Adelaide, but it was really pleasing that we could find a way. And because we, you know, you can't play your best every week, it doesn't mean you have to lose, but it was really pleasing that we did find a way to get that 4 points.
Evening, Rats. How do you go with that principle? It's often said that you'd want to walk into the club Monday morning and not really know whether we won or lost the previous weekend. And, you know, it's a learning environment, all that kind of stuff. Yeah. How much you're able to generate that kind of situation?
It is. We try and keep our emotions pretty level. They say to do that, Lee. And as you know, it's not always possible. But, you know, we sort of really focus just on the process. And yeah, probably on the weekend, we probably didn't get the first part of the game and the process right with the way we were playing. And then we sort of addressed that at halftime and the game changed a bit and away we went and we sort of got into gear and played some, you know, pretty decent footy but towards the end. But yeah, that's a challenge for any team. And for us, it's about sticking to the process.
Brett, well done on the season so far. You would have played with and against some of the game's great forwards. Tell me, when you're watching Max King right now, what are you thinking?
You know, we watch Max really closely and, you know, we probably critique his game harder than anyone. But he's really improving. He's developing physically and mentally as a young man. But, yeah, he's still improving. But what we see is, you know, how he can change a game of football. And sometimes it's not always him marking the ball, but some of those big contests that he creates to bring others into the game is really critical for us. And, you know, his performance on the weekend and, you know, to kick 6 straight, and it wasn't just the 6 straight, it was really at vital times that he did it, which, you know, the team needed it. We were sort of trying to get some momentum, but then, you know, he kicks a sort of 50-metre bomb and, you know, 45-metre bomb on a 45-degree angle. They were big goals and at critical times. So, yeah, that's great leadership development for him to do that in a game and get his reward.
Can I ask you about the observations of a bit of a late bloomer on the other side, Jack Sinclair? He's 27 now. It seems like it's only the last couple of years he's really come under our notice. But, you know, he's become a real weapon with his running and his kicking and his speed.
Yeah, it's sort of probably in my first year, Lee. I didn't play him. It was the COVID year where we all went to the hubs and that. And I actually didn't play him for the first half of that year. He had some things to work on. We spoke regularly about it. And then away he went. We watched one of the scratch matches they put together against Carlton. And he performed exceptionally well, got back in the team. And from that moment onwards, he hasn't looked back. And then his pre-season, he was outstanding. And then last year, he finished second in our best and fairest. And this year, he's, you know, he keeps growing. A lot of it's self-belief. You know, he's gone and worked extremely hard on his game. But, you know, he's really, you know, believing in himself and his ability. And, you know, he's developed into a very fine footballer.
Brett, can I ask you about the soft cap in your footy department? We had John Longmire on last night who I've got to admit, spoke pretty bleakly around how much the footy cuts...
He was flat, wasn't he?
Yeah, have hurt both him as a coach and also his footy department. How much more support do you feel you would need in the perfect world, or are things pretty balanced within the Saints footy department right now?
I think there's always room. I think we've just got to be careful of the workload, not just about the football coaches. It's about our football staff, you know, just to think of physios and you know, the fitness area, the doctors, welfare, all the department, all the areas across the department can get a bit stretched at times. And I think that's maybe the concern with the soft cap at times, that we've just got to be a bit careful we don't burn people out. And, you know, some of the good people of the game who have, you know, got great skill sets just leave the game because they are tired and probably, overworked and underpaid. So trying to get that balance is critical. And I think it's just not around the football coaches. I think it's the balance of all our areas in the football area.
And speaking about being burnt out, we've seen another guy who didn't work out for his first time as a coach in Michael Voss, doing good things at your former mob, the Blues. Is it a reminder to our industry, Brett, that just because it doesn't work out at the first club doesn't mean it won't at the second?
Yeah, I think it is a good reminder. I think it's around, I think people mature, develop. I saw Michael at Icon Park on Sunday. He was there for the reserves, the same as us, and we just had a quick chat. But I know myself, I'm more level emotionally, more balanced as a person, and I think that helps your coaching. I had a lot of energy as a young coach. 36 I started, and I think Michael was about 34 or 35. So I think as you mature, you understand. And, I was very fortunate to be involved with the Hawthorn Football Club with Clarko and some other, coaches there that are now senior coaches in Bevo and Adam Simpson and Chris Fagan. I'm very fortunate. And I'd say Michael would talk about Ken Hinckley the same, as he learned under his tutelage.
You've got some selection issues coming up, Brett, which is fantastic for you. Hunter Clark, Dan Hanbury, Jack Steele, all not playing. Obviously, Steele's going to be out for a period of time. But, at the end of the year, if they're all available, it's a potent midfield and some good players are going to miss out.
Yeah, it is. Even this week, Clark's performance at BFL level was fantastic. And Mitch Owens as well played extremely well. Ryan Burns was the sub and travelled back and had 30-odd possession, played really well. And Dan Butler was exceptional. So we've got players knocking on the door, which is great, and it's putting a lot of pressure. And, we sat down as a match committee and, we bounced a few names, and there's going to be some unlucky boys that miss out, but that's great to see because we haven't had that in the past. So we're really, striving to get better as a group. And, it's going to be interesting if, when Steele gets back and the others as well.
One final one, Brett, and it's off Broadway in many respects, although Nick Rewell put it right in the middle of Broadway. But Sam Fisher is a great of the St Kilda Footy Club, as is Nick Rewell. And Nick was passionate in his plea to the AFL and the Players Association, we've got to do more for guys leaving the industry. Where do you sit on this? You've been around for a long time. You've seen, as I have, people flourish, and unfortunately a small percentage of people go by the wayside, and some dramatically so. Are we doing enough to look after people post their careers?
As a football club, we're working extremely hard. Tony Brown, we've got Jared Jess, we've got Arnie Katrina Amon, that are really trying to help the players, the current players now. The great thing for our football club is the Danny Frawley Centre and what it does for our present players, our past players moving forward, and the community as well. And hopefully with these things in place, we can reach out and support everybody, the present players and the past players. But it is a challenge. It's hard to control everybody in life. But I know Tony Brown is constantly talking to past players and trying to support past players as much as he can. So it is a challenge. Our club, I think, with what Tony's doing and with the Danny Frawley Centre, I think we're trying to put something in place that we can maybe even go further and deeper into their past football careers to try and help out and reach out just to see if they're all right.
Appreciate your thoughts on that particular aspect, Brett, but you've got a great platform to have a great assault on the finals. So thanks for your time tonight. Good luck for the weekend and for the rest of the season.
Thanks, fellas. Take care.
Brett Ratten there, the coach of the Saints, joining Jared and Lee.
Now on Sports Day, from the lips of lethal, always keep your head in the zone. Visit makingourfarmsafer.org.au.
Just an example, Jared, that even the best make mistakes. And that's our panel operator, Zoe. There's no one better in the country than her pushing buttons, but she's pressed the wrong one. Lips of lethal. She's blaming Lawrence. Lips of lethal still
need to expose
coming up.
Is it?
Still coming up. It's not yet.
Okay. Well,
and we absolutely had to expose him. We couldn't have it being
Lee's still with us. So, Lee, give us something about your philosophy on free kicks.
my philosophy on free kicks, it's more an observation, Jared, over the decades, right?
Yeah.
I'll just give this quickly. 1970, there was an average of 82 free kicks a game. 1980, average of 72. 1990, it's coming down to 48. 2000, 36. 2010, 38. Now, what I would say, Jared, and we know for a fact, players have got fitter and fitter over the decades. Therefore, they cover more ground. There's more congestion. There's more contact. There's more umpires. But the free kicks have dropped. Now, as Julius Sumner Miller used to say, why is that so?
Well, I reckon they stopped paying the free kicks that they saw and started paying the free kicks to, quote the guy who was running the show at that stage, I think it was Jeff Geeshan, you pay the free kicks that the granny in the grandstand can see, which is a problem because we can see a lot more than her because we see it on TV.
Well, that's a fact. I mean, it's just a strange thing. I mean, the debate about, there was a game last weekend, obviously Hawthorn and the Lions, where there was 63 free kicks, which in the modern era was a lot of free kicks. But I will also say there was 35 goals kicked. It was a magnificent game of football.
Yeah.
35 goals. It came down to the wire. You can never guarantee a close game, but the best games of football are the ones where it's high scoring and close because we want a close contact. And I've always had a view that if you'd say harsh umpiring as opposed to lenient, harsh umpiring makes for a better game. That's always been my kind of general view on it all. Like, you know, we'll go way back, Jared. I'm really going way back here. One of the most spectacular grand finals ever. 1972, Carlton Richmond, 50 goals were kicked.
Yep.
And there were 73 free kicks. So, I mean, I sometimes
was only one umpire,
wonder,
too.
Only one umpire. But I'm just, it's amazing how they, you can imagine how much more contact is in modern footy compared to a couple of generations ago when you played a bit later than I. But when we played, because players are fitter, therefore they get closer to the ball, there is that much more potential free kicks, one would have to say, now than there was 20 or 30 years ago. But the umpire blows their whistle less. I can have never quite understood that. So this thought that high free kicks are bad for the game, don't buy that at all.
The great Lee Matthews continues with us next when we will have the Lips of Lethal.
Now on Sports Day, from the Lips of Lethal, always keep your head in the zone. Visit makingourfarmsafer.org.au.
Are you going to have a chat with them out the back?
I reckon this time, Lee, it's over to you. The Blues, how are you making of them? What are you making of the Blues?
Oh, I liked them. I liked them a lot last Friday night, I must say. Like, I just mentioned when we were talking about North Melbourne, I mean, remember round 19 last year?
Yeah.
North Melbourne beat Carlton by 39 points. I mean, that's sort of what now about 10. Anyway, let's forget about North Melbourne. I love the Carlton double whammy, right? In the second quarter, when they had control of the game, they kicked 9-3. I reckon it says something about a team that when they can have a really big quarter like that, clearly they're not going to kick 9 every quarter, but I think that was a really big tick. But on the other side of the coin, in the fourth quarter, when the Swans are back in the game and were in control of the game, and the Swans had 18 inside 50 entries in the last quarter, and they were coming hard, but the Carlton defence kept them to 1-5.
Yep.
So they showed the ability to score. But I didn't think they were outstanding, even by their own standards. I didn't think they were outstanding on the night, but the Swans are a pretty good team, so you wouldn't think they're going to dominate the Swans. But, yeah, the ability to kick 9 when they had control of the game and then to hold the Swans to only 1 in the final term when the Swans had control. They look great. I mean, I think the Wiedering, Doherty, they're just great as a defensive, leading the defence. Kurnow looks like Buddy Mark too. I mean, Buddy's different, isn't he? He's like the big half-forward flanker. He's tall, but he can run, and he's agile at ground level. And Kurnow, Charlie Kurnow's got that look about him too, I reckon. He can take an overhead mark, probably better than Buddy maybe, but he looks like he's a really good mover. Obviously missed a lot of footy, so he looks really exciting. And I reckon about this time last year, my observation was Patrick Cripps had lost 5 yards.
Yep.
Well, he's got him back.
He's found him.
He is now running away from the congested play. The congested play. So he's always had the power and the great ball winning, but his running power, he just looks a completely different athlete than he did 12 months ago. I mean, we know he had some kind of injury, but something was preventing him. It's the re-emergence of the running power. He's always been a strong player, but geez, his running power is elite at the moment. So, no, they're looking really good, Carlton.
Do you think players and clubs should tell the public when a player's champion player's battling like he was last year, do you think they should say he's coping with an injury? Because clearly he was.
Well, to be honest, though, when you're out there, you're out there. I mean,
yeah,
I think
I understand that.
But
that's different from saying he's dealing with an injury.
But then why would you tell your opposition? Why would you give them a free?
Well, because his reputation was being tarnished badly last year. I mean, and I think it was self-evident now that he was dealing with something that was pretty savage.
Yeah, I mean, how transparent do you be with you? I mean, because it wasn't so, like, if he's got a cracked ribs or something, you'd never try to the opposition know about that. But just the fact that he didn't, but what, he had a back fracture or something, Sam and Jared. Is that what he actually had that was somehow?
Yeah, he had a crack in his lower back.
But therefore, he was playing in some pain, was he?
Yep.
Yeah. Anyway, his re-emergence this year has been astounding. It's been great.
What about the Cats, Lee?
Well, every time I watched Geelong play, we were down there on Saturday afternoon, and they overwhelmed the Port okay. But I always think for them to be like top four premiership trance, they need Danger and Selwood both at their best still. And Joel obviously is getting into his 30s. And on the, off the back of Tom Mitchell's situation on Sunday, like, he didn't play the week before.
Yep.
Now, I don't know whether, is it coincidence or is there a connection that Tom had the week off but come back and played a terrific game last Sunday. Now, it's interesting, like, and I particularly think that Danger shouldn't be in that category, but maybe Joel, and Geelong do manage their players. I mean, they'll often just have players out managed, right? But is it possible that, given that everyone has a rest in the mid-season, is it possible, Jared, that you think, well, there's some players that potentially, I don't know, through the condition, the GPS, what have you, can be better, even injury-free, but play 19 games instead of 22? In other words, they have a week off, rounds 5 to 7 there somewhere, and another week off rounds 17 to 18, something like that. I wonder if we're coming to the time in footy where, while it happens, it has been happening, it'll happen more often to say, to get the best out of a player. We think 18, 19 games a year in the home and away series is the best for him. Do you reckon it's coming?
I think it's going to emerge, and I think if we end up with more on the interchange bench, let's say the bench goes to 5, well, you could manage people's minutes more, but the mental rest as well as the physical rest of a weekend off as you get into your late mid-30s, which is where we're heading more going to play, I think is going to become a regular occurrence.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think the one thing we do know, I mean, we can talk about what is going on in the game, the brutality of the modern game, just the speed and the ballistic nature of the modern footballer. They just thump into each other so much just in general. Yeah, play, get tackle hard, be tackled. But off the Tom Mitchell game last Sunday, I did ask myself the question, is it a coincidence or is there a connection between having a week off and then you might be much better for the next month than you would otherwise have been?
Can't get a time back, Lee. I know if you had had a couple of weeks off a year, you'd be still playing, but too late. Your time's done.
Well, we always think, don't we? We always thought we just played every week. And obviously, pre the multiple interchange, you actually were on the ground for the whole time. But I think, as we know now, it's a 22-player game where most of the time, the majority of the 22 players play a lot of match time, 80 or 90%. The odd player might play 100% every now and again. But anyway, that was interesting. I just thought the Danger Selwood example and the Tom Mitchell one last week might have been something to note.
It's now time for a Blue Bet update. Blue Bet's AFL 12-point halftime early payout is available on all games this weekend. T's and C's apply. Gamble responsibly.
The Money Man is back. Welcome, Richard Humberston.
Evening, gentlemen. Well, tomorrow it's the perfect storm. We've got some basketball that comes in at 11 o'clock, which is just right on the time. Do a little bit of work in the morning, fire up the KO, get you through till 2 o'clock. It's beautiful. Now, Golden State can clinch this tomorrow, but Mavericks are favourite. This one's because it's at home, and Punter's just not confident they're going to go 4 and dip Golden State. So you're getting a bit of value If you do like Golden State at $1.96, the Mavs $1.85. And in the outright betting, just quickly, Golden State are your clear favourites to win the whole kit caboodle, $1.60. Boston Celtics, who were very impressive today, $3.25. The Heat, $5.50. And the poor Mavs, $51. So enjoy the basketball tomorrow. But most importantly, gamble responsibly.
Good on you, Richard. Richard Hummerston from Bluebet. Lee, we've got a tribunal happening at the present time. Sam Switkowski up for the chicken wing. What do you expect? The AFL asking for two matches.
Well, like, yeah, I don't think it's one of those things they get sort of four or five or something. I mean, I don't know what you'd get for that in these days in modern footy, Jared. But maybe one or two for the dangerous act, I suppose, is reasonable. Didn't give that one a heap of thought, I got to say.
Okay, well, you had two goes at Lips at Lethal. I just thought we'd squeeze it in late in the third crack. Have a good week, Lee.
Happy to do it. Thanks, guys.
Yes, no, Richo is tomorrow. Jared's back for it. He's pretty pumped. Can I get a couple in tomorrow?
Yeah, have you got any prepared?
No.